Hello and welcome into the TCU on SI bullpen. This is season two, episode one. We're back with the new season. Whatever happened last season, we will not discuss anymore. I'm your host, JD Andrus. It's November 5th. It's November. We shouldn't really be talking baseball. We had a purple and white series, and I'm gonna break it down. We're gonna talk about a bunch of things that happened this past summer, and I'm joined again once again by my awesome co-host Carson Worsell. Carson, we've had baseball. We got a
Shouldn't
purple
be
and
t
white series that
hang on,
happened.
hang on. Shouldn't be talking about baseball. It's November, more like it's already November, JD.
No, I'm saying more so because there's women's basketball on right now. We should be giving everyone their flowers. TCU's become exceptional at volleyball, soccer, women's basketball. There's a
All
lot to talk
right.
about, so maybe we should have talked baseball, but we're fiends and we're going to anyways. But we had some baseball this past 2 weeks. We had the TCU Purple and White series. No fall game. So that leads me to my question that I'm going to start us off with. How do you feel about TCU not having a fall game against another opponent?
I think it's interesting because I think you lose a little bit of kind of game scenario because obviously these guys have been scrimmaging, 2 to 3 times a week at least, from what Cole Kramer said last time he was on the pod. And I think that's encouraging. I do think that the mental aspect could definitely come into effect once we get actually going with scrimmages over in the spring. I kind of want to pop this question back to you. What do you think about it? And do you think it's because of the return of Bill Mosiello?
It crossed my mind, but not so because I think it's something that they're trying to hide. I think it's more so that I've never understood really a point in playing other teams. Just because I think, whenever you're in the fall, you're kind of working on your team cohesion. And we're going to talk about this later, is how young this team is, right? They go out and have a fall performance from a pitching staff that is extremely young, and you get shelled. It's a fall game. No one really cares what the final stat line is. That's still a confidence ruiner.
True.
So there could be reasoning behind it. I'm never going to question Kirk Sarlos on his decision making the same
Oh,
way
me neither.
I would question Sonny Dykes on his decision making. And Kirk, we trust. And I think I kind of like it. I kind of like not playing another team, not having to worry about that. I'm sure Cole would be disappointed in that answer because I'm sure he's itching to play other teams. But yeah, Carson, we had a pretty busy offseason, regardless of everything that happened. We had Ben Abelt on the pod, we had Anthony Silva on the pod, we had Cole Kramer twice. We will have some more future guests too before the season starts. But a bunch of them are gonna be transfers. That TCU had a lot of transfers.
Yeah.
They had a few transfer outs, one major transfer that I'm gonna get your thoughts on because I know you're still hurting a little bit from it. But TCU had a lot of I had a lot of players transfer in that are really exciting for this upcoming season. We'll go down the list now. Jack Bell, shortstop from A&M, shortstop and second base utility player. He should be an exceptional piece that probably pans out to start at second base to start the season. We'll kind of see. We're going to talk some things out because this team is kind of loaded right now. You have Isaac Cadena. He's a left fielder slash catcher, which I know is a weird combination, but that is his combination. He's a transfer from Ohio State, and we're going to hopefully have him on the podcast sometime soon. Trey Newman, who will be a sophomore, he's transferring in from Cal. He was actually on the USA freshman All-American team last year and has disgusting metrics on his stuff. We have Gianluca Shin. He's a pitcher. He's a senior from Washington. We also had Tommy Laporte, who's probably the biggest name that transferred in outside of Jack Bell. It's arguable. Tommy Laporte was the number two pitcher out of the portal that teams wanted, and he came to TCU. I think it's time, Carson, to kind of start talk about a Wichita State to TCU pipeline that's growing.
I mean, I think it's already here.
Yeah.
I
He
think if
says
you go to Wichita State as a pitcher, you automatically assume, hey, in
yeah.
2 years, I'm going to be pitching for the Horned Frogs.
Tommy Laporte will be a sophomore this year. He has a great fastball that sits in the mid 90s. According to the TCU speed gun, which we all know is a little slow, but he's got great stuff. He's basically his pitching comp is a harder throwing Peyton Tolley, which is very exciting because we all saw what Peyton Tolley did last season under the direction of Kirk Charlos and Dave Lawn. And the last one that we've already talked to twice is Cole Kramer, the Washington State utility player. I do think it's pretty interesting that Cole Kramer is the oldest player on the team.
Yeah.
And he's only getting, he was a junior last year, so he is a true 4-year senior, and he's the oldest player on the team, which says a lot about the youth of this ball club. Now let's talk about a few players that did transfer out, and I'm sorry for what we're about to do, Carson. We'll go easy on you first. Holden Harris, freshman pitcher, he transferred to UTSA. Ryder Robinson, last year, everyday second baseman, transferred to BYU. Makes a lot of sense for him. That was close to home for him. And I unfortunately don't think there's a spot for him in the starting lineup this year, just based off what we saw last year. Chase Hoover, lefty flamethrower who was crazy inconsistent, but when he was on, he was on.
Well, I remember first time he came out last season. I had always thought that he was like a low 90s guy with, that slow moving curveball. No, he gets out there and he ramps it up to 97 on one of the first pitches, and I'm sitting there like, wait, who is this guy? So I think, I mean, from a velocity standpoint, TCU will miss him, I think, but I do think that was kind of a an expected transfer.
It does hurt to see him go. And I keep alluding that we're going to talk about this later, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it again. We're going to talk about it later, that there's not a lot of seniority in the TCU bullpen nor in the starting rotation, that he would have been a nice piece to have. And then the last transfer and the biggest transfer is Logan Maxwell, transferred to Arkansas. Carson, Logan Maxwell, you have been on the podcast multiple times stating he is your favorite player, and we saw him transfer out. Brody Green would never. Go ahead and give me your thoughts.
Brody Green would never. Hey, Brody Green didn't play in the fall games.
He's preparing for the season. We're
Right, he's
focused on the
getting
bigger picture.
no. You're right. He's getting mentally ready. Yeah, that was honestly, that was kind of one that surprised me. Just because I think he was kind of viewed as a leader on TCU squad. But I think going into this season, I think he was aware that there were probably some better hitters that would take his DH spot, I think. Just because there, I think there's like right now, like I've got like four or five guys that could slot into that DH spot. And I don't know which direction they're going to go because, there were a lot of freshmen that just showed out in this Fall World Series. I mean, Jacob Silva obviously had a pretty good series. Nolan Traeger again was just on fire in each game. And then a guy that I don't think got talked about really a lot in recruiting was Preston Gamster, who had three hits in game one. I believe he had one hit with two RBIs in the second game, and then he had another triple in the third game and then left in the third inning due to a non-contact injury at second base. So hopefully he's okay. Hopefully he'll be ready by the beginning of the season. But there was a lot of talent on the hitting side to kind of pick out from in this Fall World Series.
You almost started getting ahead of yourself a little bit too much
Sorry,
there.
I definitely
I could see how
I
excited you
moved
are.
forward a little. I yeah.
I think losing Logan Maxwell is a key piece.
Yeah.
Again, there's not a lot of seniority on this team that he would have been a great piece, but I do think the seniority that is on this team, to the likes of Carson Bowen and Anthony Silva, is very, very strong in itself. And I think it speaks more to what you alluded to and kind of where I stand is that. Yeah, it sucks to lose Logan Maxwell because he's been the most consistent hitter for the past two seasons for the Frogs. But I don't feel like TCU downgraded at all. In fact, I dare I say slightly upgraded. And it's not a dig at Logan Maxwell because obviously you know what his bat can do. But he wasn't the greatest left fielder, right?
Right.
like defensively metric wise. But and if you're replacing him with the likes of Noah Franco, I'd consider it an upgrade.
By the way, Noah Franco in game two, absolute laser to second base from the left field line to gun Isaac Cadena down at second.
Yeah.
That was an insane throw.
It's
If
kind of.
any of you guys saw it that are watching or listening to this, just you know the throw that I'm talking about.
Yeah, let's talk about the TCU, recruits that came in from the 2024 class. TCU only lost one entire recruit in their 2024 class to the draft, and that was Blake Larson, who signed with the second round pick with the Chicago White Sox. But TCU was able to get two players who weren't expected to touch campus in Sawyer Strawsnider and Noah Franco. And I think being able to get them and being on campus, especially with the way baseball rules are, that now they have to compete for 3 seasons before they can enter the draft, TCU is able to keep them throughout the portal and everything. Like, those are massive gets for the Horned Frogs. And
Oh,
especially
yeah.
in, I do think, and we're going to talk about it, is that they're both players who play the outfield, and the outfield is a very crowded position right now for TCU. But they've also got a lot of arms in that recruiting class that could play big roles. You got Mason Brasfield, who pitched a lot during the Purple and White series and looked great. Trevor Baumler, he had his performance and looked good. Nolan Traeger was getting all the reps at catching position, and we're going to talk about why here in a little bit. Caden Smith is in there. Caden Durman, Andrew Carter, Kate Udy, Zach James, Tyler Finau, Jacob Silva, the younger brother of Anthony Silva, who's a switch hitting catcher, and then Landon Young, a shortstop, who also got some reps in the Purple and White series. That I think there's a lot of names on this list that can be huge, huge pieces for the future and what's to come. That I think you even look at the 2025 class, 2026 class. What Kirk Starless has been able to do with recruiting is insane.
Oh yeah. I mean he's keeping up with, some of those premier programs like Tennessee, Texas A&M, Wake Forest, just programs that always have good recruiting classes where you've got guys that can make an impact in their first year in college baseball.
Yeah, I think it's probably the most impressive thing is, when Kirk Starless took the helm, everyone kind of questioned would he be able to recruit at the same level that Schlossnagel was. Everyone knew he'd be able to develop the players. That wasn't the question. It was a question of would he be able to recruit. And I think he's not only done what Schlossnagel did, but also made it better. He's picked up elite talent and been able to get them to come to campus, which is part of the challenge in recruiting for baseball that no other major sport has to compete with.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously unfortunate that you lose out on, some of the guys that got drafted this past year. And then, a couple of years before, I do have to shout out Creed Willems, who was projected to or committed to TCU and then is now playing in the, I believe, AAA organization for the Orioles. So he's doing fine right now, I'm sure. But yeah, that's definitely been a pleasant surprise, at least this season with the recruiting class, is keeping Noah Franco and Strawsnyder for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see them, and we're about to talk about the results. I promise I won't hold you any longer. Last thing we will
Oh,
talk
you're
about
good.
before we talk about the Purple and White series is the fact that we did have two key injuries happen this offseason. One was to starting center fielder Chase Brunson. He had back surgery. Everything went successful, according to Kirk Starless, and he is on track to be back sometime shortly. So it is an injury that we did know was bothering him last season, especially towards the end. It's why he came out of a lot of the games closer to the end. But we did see him play at Globe Life in the Big 12 tournament that, we weren't sure how serious it was. And the other major injury is Carson Bowen. He was dealing with blood clots, and he had another disease that I can't remember the name of, but basically had to take out a short rib that was in his nearest collarbone. It's a pretty common procedure that happens to a lot of athletes. He had that happen. don't really know what his timeline is, slash if he has one, because it is also blood clot, so he's on blood thinners. There's a lot of different things going on.
I think I'm pretty sure Sarlo said that he was kind of he was working his way back currently and was projected to be like towards the end of the year starting to fully ramp it
I
up.
was gonna say we knew Brunson would be back and throwing to everything this month, in November. Sarlos did say that, but there was no clear timeline on Bowen, but we know he should be ready for the start of the season. Out of those two, like, is there one that it's like, hey, they need to take the first month of the season off to kind of still rebuild? Is there one that is based off the projected roster that you'd be like, hey, you know what? We got the guys behind him that let's give him his month and then put him back in whenever he gets help.
Honestly, I think I would want Chase Brunson to take a seat for a little bit because I know that back injuries can really linger. It's the same as ankle injuries where you like one little tweak can put you out for the next 3 or 4 weeks up to a month. So, and some of the stuff that I saw from outfielders, especially from the hitting aspect, I think we're okay at at the outfield position right now.
That's kind of exactly what the angle I was going for, is that Brunson's is a back injury, which is very easy to tweak, and we see it happen a lot throughout MLB players, other college players, that it's something that once it goes and you don't allow it to fully heal and you try to play through it, it's only something that gets worse over time. Now it gets has the potential to get better. But yeah, let's go to talk about it. Purple and White World Series. I was not able to go to the last two games. My old man bat kind of gave out on me, so I wasn't able to go. I was there for the first game. Carson was there for all three. Kudos to him for being healthy and young. Carson, your first initial takeaways. Just don't go into any specifics. Don't talk about a player. Just tell me your absolute initial thoughts when you left.
Two things. I like gritty hitting performances. I like grinding at bats, and I thought that both teams did that pretty well. The purple team, obviously, more so. The second thing is that I think Sarlos has the right idea about this series, where, obviously, you want to see. I asked him after game one, I said, you had a few pitchers that got out of some tough scenarios, runners on first and third, and you don't give up any runs, or runners on first and second, you only give up one or something like that with no outs. He said it's kind of a double-edged sword, because you would like to see your pitchers get out of scenarios like that, but then you would also like your hitters to capitalize on some pitchers' mistakes. So I think he has a very neutral viewpoint on the series itself. And so I think he looks for a lot of little things in this series, which I think is what a good coach does. You look for how your team responds, how the other team is going to respond to a big inning. You look for how your pitching staff and your hitters are going to respond to tough outings and stuff like that. So I left the field on game three feeling good about Team Purple's hitting performances, and then feeling a little bit dejected about Team White just because they couldn't steal a game, and they get swept.
It's actually, we're going to pivot to it. Is one of the questions that you have written down that I want to discuss is, you said obviously a lot of the pitchers had blow up innings, and do we think that was just because there's a lack of pitching right there, or is it because the hitting is quite good? And I think it's one of those where it's like Kirk said, like, you're never going to win that argument because these guys see each other every day, they scrimmage every day. They know what they're getting against them. The more you become familiar with someone, the easier it is, no matter how good of a pitcher they are. That I think there's no real answer to that. But I will say is that there was a lot of pop in the bats. that we hadn't seen at all last season.
Yeah.
That I think is not because of lack of pitching, but I think it's just one, the players that we have now are extremely talented, and two, the Bill Mozeliello effect.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of a combination of being both, not to, give the obvious cop-out answer, but I think it's a combination of a lot of hitting talent, especially young hitting talent, and then a lot of young pitching. Because there were a few freshmen that got, opportunities in this series as well, and obviously they didn't do as good as, Luis Rodriguez or Cole Klecker or Trey Newman. Those guys have had these fall games and they've had seasons under their belt, so they obviously know what to expect from hitters and they know how to react to adversity better, I think.
Yeah, I think it's I it's it, it does feel like such a cop out answer, but I think it really is the best one. It's just that there is no winning in that. I do think that the pitching was great whenever we had it. I think there were a few more walks, but it's also that is, as Cole Kramer said, that's frog ball. You fight off pitches and then you work your way into a walk or a base hit, and we saw a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean that's what I mean by gritty hitting performances. I mean, you're like I know there's one guy, I believe it was I think it was Micah Kendrick actually, who went like 0 for 2 on the first day, but still had two walks. Next day, I think he had two line drive outs, and the stat line says he's 0 for 3 on the day, which obviously we know. Us being from a college baseball background, we obviously know that line drives turn into hits, the more you put the ball in play in that way. While we're on the topic of kind of the lack of pitching depth, Tommy Lapore threw three innings and he had himself a blow-up inning, like we already addressed. It was two strikeouts, seven hits, six runs, and then one walk. Are we concerned about that outing, or is that just a case of the guy seeing him every day?
He could have given up 20 runs in that inning, and I wouldn't have cared when I saw that that gun was lighting up to 96, 97.
I know that was going to be the answer?
I'm just being honest. Like we just talked about it, is that these guys have so many reps against each other that you expect offensive showings in these games. Like, that's what you expect.
Yeah.
So I am not concerned at all. In fact, I think that him having a blow-up inning was probably the best thing that could have happened, because now it gives him a little bit of adversity, and now it gives Kirk Sarlos and Dave Lawn the opportunity to see how he handles it and see what he needs from them to be able to succeed better. So, but
Yeah,
yeah, keep throwing 96, 97, and I'm all game.
me and you just think of the same wavelength because that's word for word what I was gonna go to. So I'm not even gonna add on to that. I agree.
Yeah, you want to talk Preston Gamster? Floor is yours.
I do want to talk Preston Gamster because I think he's gonna find his way into the lineup because every single one of his at bats, I think besides one or two here and there, every single one of his bats were competitive. First day he's got three hits and two RBIs. The second day, and I've already said this, I believe he had one to two hits with another RBI at least. And then the third game, he's got a triple in his first two at bats. He walks, I think, in his third, and then he gets to second, and then he unfortunately has a non-contact injury, which obviously hope that he's okay because I want to see more of him just because I was very high on him after the first game, just because I saw the way that he conducted himself at the plate. So don't be surprised if that name gets slotted into a DH spot or maybe even starts at third base, because I think that's where he's been working for most of the fall. Not to take anything away from Brody Green.
No, I know. I
Not to
know.
take away from
I'm
anything.
debating if I want to ask the question now or I want to wait till the absolute end, but I think I'm going to save it for the end.
Okay.
We saw Noah Franco, game one, walk-off home run.
Yes.
It was a wall scraper. It was 93-mile-an-hour exit velo, but
Doesn't matter, went over the wall.
yeah, went over the wall. We had two home runs over the 3-game period. Sawyer Strawsnider, I think the entire first game roped every ball over 100 miles per hour. The hitting was there, man.
Well, I mean, just the trio of Strasnyder, Cadena, and then Franco. I mean, the average exit velo of their hits slash home runs was probably above 100, because Noah Franco just hits the crap out of the ball, man. It's fun to watch, and I can't wait to watch him in the spring.
Yeah, few names we haven't even discussed. Sam Myers, he had a pretty good showing over the 3 games. What you expect from Sam Myers?
I will say,
I'm gonna save the question. Go
Anthony
ahead. Go ahead.
Silva, by the way, had a crazy fall series.
Yeah, I was getting to
Like,
it.
oh, is that what your question was
No, it
about?
wasn't my
Oh,
question, but
okay. Yeah, no,
I was gonna talk
I.
about. Is it time for the resurgence, Carson?
I think so. I think so. No, I mean, Anthony Silva, he's looked like a completely different hitter. Obviously, this is against, TCU pitching, which he's seen before. But I mean, I really think this could be a confidence builder for the junior, because, last year he, like, not to be frank, well, I guess to be frank, he was kind of a hole in the lineup besides a few games here and there. He was good at putting the ball into play. It was never hard contact. And I think that was just kind of a sophomore slump for him. That's what I'm hoping it was. Yeah, I mean, he looked good. Three hits in game two, I believe. I think one in game one. And then game three, he had a, where is it? Yeah, a 2-run shot to left field that was absolutely obliterated.
Yeah, he came on the podcast and told us how determined he was to come back this season and beat the freshman year version of him. And I've never seen Silva that determined in anything. And I think it's just like if he can get back to that freshman year, right? Like he is a top five shortstop in all of college baseball. And I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the fact he even hit a home run shows a lot because he only hit four last season. Noah Franco hit two. I think we tied last year's season total in a 3-game series. Like there might be a legitimate argument for that. But yeah, I think it's just so interesting that he's back to playing his great ball. You got Jack Bell, who is a highly was a highly sought after transfer portal guy. And none of these guys were even the best players of the 3-game series. The best player of the 3-game series was Nolan Treger. Incoming
Yes.
freshman, younger brother of Jax Treger. I do think it's funny that there's two younger brothers on the team and they're both catchers.
I know, right?
But yeah, Nolan Treger, straight up just, you
Dog.
can't get him out. You can't get
Just
him out.
a dog. No, watching him hit is so fun. Just because it's like he's the kind of, I can't think of kind of a comparison for him, because I don't think that TCU has had a lefty catcher who has worked both sides of the field so well. Obviously Evan Skoug, very, very good pull hitter, absolutely historic in TCU baseball history. But I mean, Nolan just uses the opposite side of the field when, that pitcher's living on the outside half. I think he struggled with Tommy Lapore. Or sorry, he struggled with Cademan Parker. No, I was right. I was right. I should have labeled these guys purple and white, but he did struggle on the kind of the high velo stuff. But other than that, I mean, It didn't matter what was thrown, 93 or 81, he was hitting the crap out of it. So, I mean, he gives frog ball fans a lot to be happy about in this upcoming season, I think, and a lot to be excited about.
Yeah, I'm super excited for him. I think his bat came to play. A little bit of defensive issues here and there, but I'm sure they'll
A
work
little bit.
themselves out, especially as he gets used to catching all these guys and learning how their pitches move and being
Yeah.
able to, grow in time with that. Anything else you want to add to the Purple and White series before we move on to the final question and we'll call this thing quits?
I'm scared about the final question. I kind of wanted to like delay
Nope,
it.
it's gonna happen.
Colton Griffin and Cole Eaton surprisingly had pretty good fall
Colton
series.
Griffin's got some wheels.
Yeah, it seems like I don't know. It's not that they were really under the radar. It's just that I didn't expect them to have such a big impact on the games because, I mean, both Cole Eaton and Colton Griffin were hard to get out pretty much all series. I think Cole Eaton had a bad game, I think, in game two. But other than that, I mean, they were good for two out of the three games of the series. And I think at the end of the day, that's what you're looking for some of those guys that are fighting for a starting spot come spring.
Yeah. Other thing I want to talk about is Cole Kramer did go yard and was at first base, which was pretty interesting to me.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to talk to him about it and be like, I didn't realize, you played both hot corners. But yeah, he went yard and he came on here and said he's not known for his power, but he said, screw it, I'll launch one too, everyone else is.
So is this your public apology for not being there for the Grand Slam?
Maybe it's a good thing I wasn't there. We'll have
So
to keep track of the games that
you
I'm at
admit
this
it.
spring. We'll just have to keep track of the games in the spring, and then we'll go from there.
No, you're good. You've already said all you need to say.
One other name that I want to go over it before I move on to my question is Luis Rodriguez. He looked good, man.
Stellar.
He looked great.
Stellar. Yeah, that's just like I wrote down here on our little Google Doc, just the usual Luis Rodriguez.
Yeah.
He just deals, man.
Yeah, he looked great. He had his issues last year when he can't find a slider, but he found a slider in both appearances that he had. So it was great to see. Cole Klecker was on the mound, 2 innings pitch, 1 strikeout, 1 hit, 1 walk. I do think it'll be interesting, and we'll discuss this as we get closer to season, but I think it'd be interesting what the use of Cole Klecker is this season. But yeah, let's move on. I have a question,
All
Carson.
right, hit me with it.
Season starts tomorrow. Give me your starting nine.
Oh boy. Okay. Are we
Let's assume
include
Carson Bowen and Chase Brunson are both 100% healthy.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. Okay. Noah Franco left field, center field Chase Brunson, right field Strauss Snyder, second base. This is tough for me. I want Colton Griffin at second base. Silva, obviously, at short. I want Brody Green at third, both to please you and just for his bat, because I think his bat is one that you can't leave out of the lineup. I'm gonna go Cole Kramer at first base. And then obviously whoever's pitching on the mound, we'll say Tommy
We'll
Lepore.
assume Tommy Lepore is Friday night guy for now.
Right. And then for catcher, I genuinely think it's like there are three viable options for that. I'm a big defensive guy at catcher, even if the hitting takes a little bit of a fall off. So I am gonna go Carson Bowen at catcher. I almost said shortstop. And then a
I
DH.
mean, Luke Poyers played third last year, so Carson Bowen
Nothing.
might be able to play short.
Nothing's impossible. And then for DH, I gotta put Nolan Treger there. I mean, you
Interesting.
just he. Oh my gosh.
So there's two names you left off of there that are both in my starting nine. We're gonna go left field, Sam Myers. Center field, Chase Brunson. Right field, Sawyer Strauss Snyder. First base, Noah Franco. Second base, Jack Bell. Shortstop, Anthony Silva. Third base, Cole Kramer. Catcher is Carson Bowen. I also value defense. And DH is Isaac Cadena.
Yeah, I
And the
mean,
reason I'm putting Isaac Cadena at DH over the likes of Nolan Treger or Jack Arthur, who we saw, or even Trevor Bauhnler or Preston Gamster, is because my thought process is that Isaac Cadena will be the rotating catcher with Carson Bowen. I don't think it'll be Nolan Treger.
I could expect definitely that Traeger doesn't get as much time as people want him to, because I think, taking that first year and kind of getting used to that process, getting used to the season, because obviously you're traveling. I won't say a lot more, but you're traveling longer distances than just like high school ball. But yeah, I think Isaac Cadena, and then, like we said, there are like four or five guys that I think could be fighting for that DH spot.
Yeah, I mean, you left
I
out
mean,
Sam Myers, who finished
I
the
did.
season with the highest batting average for TCU last season.
Yeah, I did. No, I don't know. And I think it's just because I want to see kind of the younger guys. But Noah Franco, I wasn't really expecting him to start in left field, even though that's what he's listed as on like Five Tool and Perfect Game. He's listed as an outfielder slash like utility guy, pretty much.
He's also a pitcher.
He's also a pitcher, yeah, which I no clue how that's gonna work out. We'll see. But he looked good in left field. I mean, just defensively, he made multiple throws that either held up a guy from scoring at the plate or, obviously throwing people out at second base like he did in game two. And I hate leaving Sam Myers off of that starting lineup. And that could change with how the fall kind of plays out. Like we could get in there for a couple more scrimmages or something like that, just if we're free, but I genuinely think it's a toss-up at multiple positions. So it doesn't surprise me that you've got different guys at center field and then second base
Yeah,
and then
I think my biggest
DH.
thing will be who is rotating out with Carson Bowen. We saw a lot last year that they are more than willing and wanting to switch out and rotate Carson Bowen out so that way he's not getting
Yeah.
ran down throughout the season, because baseball is a long game. You're planning to play in June and you start in February. Like, you're gonna get worn down. So I just think Isaac Cadena is still right now the number two option for that catching spot. I think it's where he slots in the best. We'll talk about it more as we get into it. We're gonna end things here, but I don't want to be Kirk Starless having to make that first lineup right now. I think
Oh,
there's just so many guys.
well, but I think that's what he loves,
Yeah.
and he's mentioned it multiple times over the years. The player's job is to make my job impossible when I'm filling out that lineup on Friday night. Like, I think that's a good thing that we can have debates like this over multiple positions. One thing I do want to say before we sign off here is that I'm disappointed that we didn't get to see Kadena at catcher in the Fall World Series. I would have loved to see a little bit of work from him. But then again, I guess we didn't see Carson Bowen either. So maybe they were just forbidden from playing catcher because they're too good. I think that's the story that I'm going to tell myself right now. But that's all I've got, really.
Yeah. All right. That'll do it for this episode. Can't tell you when we'll be back. I would assume sometime around January. We'll start ramping it up. Maybe if we're itching to get on and talk some more baseball, we'll have another one until then. But until that next episode, thank you for watching season two, episode one of the TCU on SI Bullpen. I'm your host, Shady Andrews, joined by my great co-host Carson Worsell, and we will catch you guys next time.